Vladimir Putin has delivered his most aggressive speech in years. Just weeks before Russia's general election, the country's president suddenly unveiled an array of new nuclear weapons, including a missile he says could reach almost any point in the world unchallenged. Putin's remarks to lawmakers come as NATO and Russia are deadlocked in a massive buildup of troops in Eastern Europe, levels not seen since the Cold War.
Already grappling with a new Federal Reserve chairman that seems willing to raise interest rates quicker than thought and fears inflation could quickly get out of hand, Wall Street found something new to fret over on Thursday, a possible full-fledged trade war. The Dow plunging almost 600 points with investors caught off guard when President Trump said the U.S. would slap a punitive 25% tax on steel imports and 10% on aluminum as early as next week.
Major automakers this week posted lower U.S. sales for February, but it was passenger cars that dragged down the curve. Sales of Fiat Chrysler's sporty little Italian namesake, for instance, dropped a whopping 42%, while the company's Jeeps jumped 12%, and Dodge Ram pickups saw an 8% surge with consumers. A sign that the future, at least for now, remains SUVs and pickups.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's March 2nd, 2018, 5:11 in the morning. We are glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Boy, it seemed like the week went by really quick, didn't it? Or maybe you're in the camp that thought it went by really slow. It was one or the other, right? Here we are at the end of the week. We've got a good show for you today. Paul Nolte is here. We're going to bring him into the conversation momentarily. Lots to talk with Paul about from Kingsview Asset Management. Crazy week on Wall Street. Trade war potentially out there. A little bit later in the program, Brian Summers will be here from Skift. We'll talk more about this problem. Almost a little bit of a skirmish between American Airlines and Chicago and United Airlines about the number of gates at the new expanded plan for O'Hare Airport. Brian will be with us in our second segment this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are off nearly 200 points now this morning. S&P futures down about 0.5% to 15 points. NASDAQ futures are off about 43 points, down almost 0.5% as well. Another rough day, perhaps, on Wall Street today. Markets in Europe and Asia are significantly lower as well. In Germany, down almost 2%. In London, down almost 1%. In Asia, the Nikkei finished down almost 2.5%. And the Hang Seng finished down almost 1.5%. Oil this morning is trading at $60.76 a barrel, which is down about 23 cents. Of course, the big news you heard there in the montage, President Trump has told steel and aluminum executives that he'll impose tariffs next week in a bid to boost U.S. manufacturers. His words to executives, you will have protection for the first time in a long while. The president spoke at a hastily called meeting at the White House just after there was a little bit of confusion about whether or not he would actually make that announcement yesterday. The president telling reporters the import tariffs will be 25% on steel and 10% on aluminum. European Commission president says EU will take retaliatory action if President Trump goes ahead with those tariffs on steel and aluminum. And this morning, Mexico also says the same thing, says that it will impose a retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods if those tariffs from the Trump administration go into effect. Let's bring in Paul Nolte right here off the bat to start talking about this. Paul, it certainly sounds like a trade war is brewing.
Well, more importantly, that we can call it a trade war, but it's trade issues. And really what we're looking at is the industries that he's looking to help, being steel and aluminum, are really, in the United States especially, have been dying industries for a long time. We don't produce nearly as much steel or aluminum as we used to. Where we actually do a lot of work is in the processing of it. So we import a lot of the steel and aluminum ingots, manufacture something else from it here in the United States, create additional revenue off of that, and then export that elsewhere. What this is going to do is alter that landscape maybe dramatically, and it's really part of the reason why Wall Street is taking it so poorly.
What kind of impact would this have on you and me, ordinary consumers?
Oh, we will see it in prices of larger goods, but even smaller ones like beer cans, which are certainly aluminum. But cars, planes, we're seeing it, you know, in the, if you look at Caterpillar and Deere and General Motors, they were all down significantly yesterday in response to this news because, again, those are very huge parts of their business and manufacturing.
Cars, especially yesterday, the autos numbers came out. We saw down all across the board, in some cases significantly down auto sales in the U.S. This is not a time to be messing around with that.
Well, if you look at, if you step back and take a look at auto sales over the last 4 or 5 years, we've kind of flatlined. Yeah. So we've been bouncing around inside of a range now for auto sales, and really the shift has been more to truck than auto, again, using much more in the way of metal than most auto manufacturers will use. So when you take a look at it, it actually some of the knock-on effects could be that some of the manufacturing companies move out of the United States because then they avoid that tariff, move to, let's call it Mexico, move to Mexico where they don't have to pay that tariff, do their manufacturing there, produce the goods that they would normally do in the United States, but do it much cheaper down there, not because of labor, but because of material costs.
Yeah, but the roundabout way of that, the end result of that would be lost jobs here in America, probably.
That potential is certainly exists. And what's interesting, too, when you take a look at the market yesterday, the large multinationals, again, the Caterpillars of the world, did much poorer than the smaller companies, the ones that would not necessarily be hurt as much. So the small cap index, if you will, did relatively well yesterday in a big down market.
Yeah, so the Dow was down 600 points yesterday. We lost, I guess that was about 2%. So what are we? This is 3 days in a row now.
Yeah, it's 3 days of 1% declines in the market, and we normally don't see that when the market is trading above its long term average. The last time we saw it was 2010, and it's only happened a handful of times since 1928. The good news is if that continues, the historical norm, we could see the markets trade higher here in the next couple months or so. So we're still in a corrective phase. We haven't exited that yet. That started with the unemployment report last month, and we'll see the next one, which will be all that much more important next Friday. So we're in that corrective phase, which may drag on for another month, month and a half or so, and we're going to see continued big swings in the market, both up and down here.
Paul, hang on. We'll talk more about that and also talk a little bit about the new Fed chair and his comments this week before Congress. We'll continue with Paul Nolte here on the opening bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. It could be another bumpy ride for the markets after yesterday's losses. The Dow closing down more than 400 points following President Trump's call for tariffs on imports of aluminum and steel. Concerns of a possible trade war weighing on investors. Georgia lawmakers have revoked Delta Airlines of a major sales tax break on jet fuel. It follows the airline's decision to sever promotional ties with the National Rifle Association in the wake of the Florida school shooting. Critics warn that the GOP action could backfire, harming Georgia's ability to attract business to the state. Atlanta, currently in the running as a finalist in Amazon's search for a second headquarters. On its website, Delta says it is Georgia's number one private employer, providing roughly 33,000 jobs. Sales of new cars and trucks slid last month, down 2% from last February to 1.3 million. Major companies, though, Toyota, Subaru, and Volkswagen, reported gains. Michelle Franz in ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on with Paul Nolte this morning from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, back to the markets for just a second. I know we briefly touched on it about when this has happened before, where we've seen these three and how it has come back. Has there been any, what were the problems, if you've researched this far, that caused it back then when we saw this?
No, it's really more of catching the markets off guard. And that's why you see these big drops in the markets, because it is very similar to the analogy that I think I may have used here before, too, is the fact that we've been driving in the summer months all along here, and now we've got our first snowfall, and we're all flipping out. And that's really what's going on now, is we've gotten, we've had some adversity in the markets, and everybody's trying to figure out, okay, what are the impacts of higher interest rates? What are the impacts now of tariffs? What are all the knock-on effects here? And what does that mean then for stock valuations? So the investor reaction has always been sell first and ask questions later. And so that's really what's going on here. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to hurry up and do something just for the sake of doing something in portfolios.
Were you surprised earlier this week when Jerome Powell was testifying and the new Fed chair and the market started going down based on what he said? It seemed like that didn't happen very often with Janet Yellen.
Well, he's the new kid on the block. This is the first time we actually get to hear him talk and express the views of the Fed. And in this case, actually, he expressed his own views. He said, personally, this is what I believe. Personally, this is what I think is going on, which we never heard from prior Fed chiefs. And the implication, I think, was that he was very comfortable with U.S. growth, thought it was very good, a little bit concerned about inflation. So what a lot of investors took away from Tuesday's meeting with the Senate was 4 rate hikes is definitely on the table. So now the chance of 4 hikes goes up to close to 40%. He walked back from that on Thursday, and that's normally what happens is Tuesday the markets get all excited about his first testimony, and then he goes before the House on Thursday and clarifies the situation a little bit. And certainly that had been the case with Bernanke and Yellen prior. Tuesday seems to be the reaction day, and then Thursday, well, that's not exactly what I meant. Here's reading between the lines, here's what's going on.
He's very plain spoken, too, and I wonder, we're so used to Fed speak that do you think this is going to be a different thing going forward with the way he delivers himself?
Oh, I think so, because, I mean, we've moved from Greenspan, who has said, if you understood what I said, then I have misspoken, to somebody who is very well-spoken and very plain about how he's speaking. Prior to Greenspan, we never got this type of information, and it was always very clouded. We never had press conferences after Fed decisions, etc. So this is a whole new world of transparency, and we're all trying to figure out what this means. And in some cases, I'm not so sure that it's actually a good thing, because now everybody's making the inferences, the second, third derivative of whatever. I'm not so sure that it's always a good thing.
So, are we going to be doing some buying today?
We've been doing a little bit of buying here and there, and selectively adding to some positions that, again, some companies that have gotten beaten down that we do like. We still do like the international markets. They suffered a little bit during the month of February. Technology did very well, was relatively flat for the month of February while the market was down 3-4%. We still like those areas. Those are still very good areas. They're not impacted really by the tariffs at all. So I think, again, you want to have your shopping list. You want to pick your points and say, yep, I'm going to put an extra $100 into the market next week, today, whatever it is, and not worry too terribly much about catching the bottom of the market, or for that matter, the top. But I think it's a good time to be selectively adding to the markets here.
Just don't be too aggressive.
Not yet.
Paul, have a great weekend. We'll see you again next Friday. Will you get big plans this weekend?
Yeah, it's going to be a nice quiet weekend after a lot of traveling the last couple.
Very nice. Well, have a good one. We'll see you next week.
Thanks.
Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can learn more about Paul and his colleagues at kingsview.com.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's InnoMinute Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. SingleHop, a Chicago cloud hosting company and one of the city's fastest-growing startups in recent years, has been acquired by Atlanta's InterNAP Corporation for $132 million. SingleHop has grown to 150 employees and has more than 3,000 customers. Grubhub has a new unicorn nipping at its heels. DoorDash has raised a whopping $535 million in a round led by SoftBank. New funding values the food delivery company at $1.4 billion. DoorDash plans to use the cash to expand from 600 to 1,600 cities and hire 250 more employees. And Ascent Technologies, a Chicago startup that uses artificial intelligence to help companies automate regulatory compliance programs, has raised a $6 million Series A round. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. This week, we saw plans being unveiled for an $8.5 billion expansion and rehab of O'Hare Airport. But not everybody's happy about it, including American Airlines. Brian Summers is an airline business reporter for Skift. Skift, at Skift on Twitter and Skift.com, and he is with us via Skype this morning. Brian, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
This is a big deal in Chicago. We're all abuzz about an $8.5 billion potential upgrade to O'Hare Airport, and it's already ruffling the feathers of American Airlines.
It certainly is. Chicago definitely needs this $8.5 billion modernization and expansion. I lived in Chicago in the early 90s and beyond, and you know, the airport really hasn't changed that much for almost 30 years. There is a deal, a proposed deal, for this expansion. Apparently, long ago, United and American and some of the other tenants had agreed to it. But recently, just this week, we learned that American thinks it's an unfair deal. They say that there's a special provision that got inserted at the last minute that favors United. American is upset that United is going to have five more gates than American expected. And American is refusing to sign its lease. And last we heard, the city of Chicago didn't really want to do anything about it. So there's a stalemate right now.
Well, is there a real possibility that we could lose American Airlines at O'Hare?
I highly doubt American Airlines will pull out of O'Hare. Certainly, within the posturing, American says it's possible. But really, Chicago is such an important market for all airlines, especially American and United. And if American pulled out over a five-gate dispute, they'd basically cede the market to United and probably a little bit southwest at Midway. And that makes no sense. You wouldn't want to pull out and strengthen your competitor like that.
There's been some bad blood between these two airlines for a long time. Is it likely that they have an argument here that maybe some of this was done under the table? I know you don't have many details about that, but
yeah, I don't have a lot of details about it. Of course, this week I've spoken to both United and American, and American says it's an under the table deal, as we discussed. United says it wasn't, that the deal has been around for 18 months, that everybody knew that United was going to get five extra gates. And that was going to be the way it was. I should mention that United is a little bit bigger than American in Chicago. That's always been the case. It's just that American thought United would have a 9-gate advantage going forward, and this deal has United having 14 extra gates over American. So that's the 5-gate difference.
What is that would translate into money for the airlines, having 5 or 19 extra gates?
Look, I mean, it's hard to tell, but the back of the napkin math basically says that if you have 5 gates, 7 flights a day can use each gate average. So that means that United will be able to launch an extra 35 flights a day that American was not expecting. So over the long term, you know, that's a pretty big competitive advantage.
Well, stay tuned. We'll see how this plays out. Brian, I know you've also been writing about fuel prices and this idea that maybe some of the airlines actually want higher fuel prices.
Yeah, this is an interesting idea, and we should caveat this by saying the airlines themselves don't really want higher fuel prices. Of course, they pay a big portion of their costs for fuel. They want cheap fuel. Fuel is still relatively cheap right now. Now, you have this Wall Street investment community that thinks about it a little bit differently. They say, you know what, if fuel is cheap as it is now and was even more a few months ago, airlines are going to start making a rational decision. So it's just like, you know, in your car, are you going to drive to Ohio? Well, if gas is really cheap, maybe you do it. If gas is expensive, maybe you don't bother. And in the airlines case, the analysts say, okay, well, if fuel goes up to $100 a barrel, maybe an airline like United will say, you know what, we don't have to fly from Los Angeles to Singapore. That's a new flight that they have, because the cost for us is going to be a lot higher. And if you remember from some of our earlier discussions, analysts do not like adding more capacity into the marketplace, because they believe, probably correctly, over the long term that you know, if you have more capacity, ticket prices have to fall. Airlines eventually will make less revenue.
At what point in the 100 or 105, or where is it at, where they might pass the cost along to customers in terms of higher ticket prices?
So the consensus at the conference that I covered last week with about four people that know the industry pretty well is that if fuel goes up to about $100 a barrel, maybe a little bit more, airlines can pass on the cost to consumers. Beyond that, the spike would be pretty high, and it's often hard for an airline to raise ticket prices to cover the cost of fuel if fuel gets too high.
Remind people that it was 2008 or before 2008, oil was $147 per barrel. It's about 61 today.
Yeah, it was about that high back in 2008. And the weird thing about 2008 was not so much the cost of fuel, although that was a big issue. It was that the spike happened so fast, and airlines didn't know how to cover the jump in fuel, because, you know, you can raise ticket prices a little bit as an airline, but if a ticket price is $100 one way, one day, to charge $200, you know, 6 weeks later, that's hard to do. Consumers may just not pay it, and then you're in trouble.
Brian, we're all watching what's happening with Brexit in the UK, the UK leaving the European Union. It's getting down to the wire where decisions need to be made, and airlines are getting a little nervous.
It is. Brexit is a big problem for commerce in Europe, for everything, but especially airlines. And some airlines are worried, actually lots of airlines are worried about, you know, how air routes within Europe are going to develop in 2019 and beyond. And there's a couple of issues here. One of them is very simple. It's the case for all businesses. You know, airlines, they hate uncertainty. So in some ways, they don't care what the rules are going to be in 2019 and 2020 and beyond. They just want to know what they're going to be. But the negotiators are so busy doing so many things that airlines really don't know how this is going to shake out. And Europe is an interesting place because you have airlines that are based within Europe, like real Europe. And, you know, they fly within the UK. They fly from the UK to Europe, and you mentioned Ryanair. Like, these airlines going forward do not know whether they're still going to be able to fly, say, from Brussels to London, because there's no mechanism going forward that would allow them to do it.
Well, and then the other thing too is the actual moving of people from both places. That hasn't been decided either, about what kind of access people from the UK will have to the greater European Union.
No, it hasn't. And that sort of thing comes up at conferences and among airline people as well. You know, airline folks are very worried about how and where they're going to fly, but sometimes they step back and they say, well, you know, we're just one cog in the machine. And of course, governments aren't able to tell us what's going to happen going forward because they don't know anything themselves. And lots of folks are worried about what this means going forward. I mean, something as simple as an airline like United or American flying from Chicago to London, there really is no mechanism in 2019 and beyond that would permit them to do that. Now, I think that we're all very smart people, and we know that US and UK airlines will always be able to fly from Chicago to London, but there needs to be some sort of regulatory mechanism to allow that to happen going forward.
This can be very costly. You have, back to the Ryanair, this is an airline that stands to lose a lot of money if something isn't figured out and firmed up.
Well, it is a problem. You know, Ryanair is based in Ireland. It's a European Union airline, and they fly a lot of routes from London, and they don't exactly know how they'll be able to do that going forward. You know, one option might be to get what we would call a second operating certificate, so that they would have it would all be called Ryanair, but they would have one airline based in the UK, and they would have one airline based in Dublin, and to the customer it would all look the same, but from a regulatory angle they would be separate, and that would probably allow them to keep most of their UK routes.
Ryan, always good chatting with you. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you.
They're on Skype this morning with us from at Skift on Twitter and skift.com. And be sure you sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report. You can do that at skift.com/airline. And follow Brian on Twitter as well at Brian Summers. It's S-U-M-E-R-S.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are off now 210 points. NASDAQ futures are down about 57. S&P futures off about 15. Looks like another week to a negative day on Wall Street today. Let's find out more about agriculture and commodities. Orion Samuelson is with us this morning. Good morning, Orion. What a day for stocks, our futures yesterday in the grain market.
Indeed it was. And the other area that we're looking at now is the trade issue. First of all, the trade issue that that has already put big corn against big oil, as they're calling it. A meeting at the White House this week that the president called brought in refinery officials and agricultural officials. And when the meeting ended, nothing concrete, but the president urged representatives from oil and corn industries on Thursday to break a deadlock in talks over the future of the nation's biofuels policy by accepting a deal involving reforms sought by both sides. But Steve, we've been watching this issue between oil and corn go on since back in the 70s, and I don't think we're any closer today than we were back in the 70s on negotiating an agreement that will satisfy both corn and oil. And the president of the National Corn Growers Association, pretty outspoken on this one, because he is saying simply that we don't have a problem as far as the refiners are concerned. He said, for corn farmers, the question for the ongoing White House discussion is simple. What is the problem you're trying to solve? Those were the words from the president of the National Corn Growers Association, Kevin Skunas, who is a corn producer in the state of North Dakota. And he went on to say, according to EPA, refiners don't have a problem. EPA concluded in November that refiners are able to cover the cost of the RINS, that's the term for purchasing the needed certificates to do the blending. And for farmers, ethanol blending equals corn demand. Farmers, he said, care about RIN values, not because we want them to be high, but because we want the RIN market mechanism to work freely to incentivize the blending increased. Blending will in turn lower the value of the RIN exactly the way the RFS, Renewable Fuel Standard, is intended to work. So that one is an ongoing situation, and I don't know what's really going to happen on that one. Then the other one, of course, was the tariffs on steel, which proved that NAFTA is more than just agriculture, because that raised the hackles of the steel and aluminum producers and the auto industry. So the president will have his hands full on some of these issues that really deal with the trade and the marketplace.
Orion, I know you've been following Sonny Perdue very closely and his involvement in all of this. And I know you've reported he's had the ear of the president. Is he not being successful in making the point to the president about how important these things are?
Well, he has a real challenge there, Steve, because the president is pretty well set on what he would like to see in resolving the corn and oil situation. But I do think Sonny Perdue has the ear of the president. I think the president will listen. Whether he will do what Sonny Perdue would like to see done remains to be seen. That's the big question. And so it's going to be an interesting battle. I'll bet some of those meetings in the White House with the cabinet officers are indeed going to be challenging. Sonny Perdue, the times that I've talked to him about the issue of fuel and its place in the economy, says, yeah, we'll get an agreement. I'm optimistic that it will all work out. But that's really what he has to say. I don't see that he can say anything else and keep farmers and corn farmers particularly happy. What they would like to see is an E85 market the year round that would blend 15% of biofuel with gasoline, and right now we don't have that, so that's what they're working on.
I saw a group of, I think it was like 20 Illinois farmers were in Washington lobbying for the next farm bill. What is the most important thing they want to get across to lawmakers in that area?
Most important thing is crop insurance. They don't want anything to happen to crop insurance. And I would tend to agree with them on that, Steve, because before we put crop insurance into the Farm Bill 5 years ago, that meant every time that there was a blizzard that killed cattle or there was a drought that killed crops, the various commodity groups would have to go to Congress and say, hey, we need help. This is our income, and we're not getting it because of weather. And so they are very concerned about crop insurance. And to me, crop insurance has worked. It's made sense because farmers have some skin in the game, and they are getting some financial help to pay premiums on crop insurance, but they're also investing some of their own money, and it avoids this, oh, we got to go to Congress again, and before they adjourn, we've got to get some money to take care of the disaster that we're looking at right now. So I would say crop insurance is the main concern they have in the Farm Bill.
What is coming up tomorrow on the show?
Tomorrow on the show, we'll be looking in on the Commodity Classic that was held, as a matter of fact, it's ending today in Anaheim, California. It's an interesting group, Steve, because up to a few years ago, the corn growers had their convention, the wheat growers had their convention, the sorghum growers had their convention, soybean growers had their convention. And basically, they're all dealing with a commodity that requires fertilizer and crop protection and that sort of thing. And so they took a look at it and said, why do we have to hold four separate conventions and trade shows? So let's combine it into one called Commodity Classic. And it, I think, has worked very well. I think the commodity groups have handled it very well. So we'll see what ultimately will come from this year's get-together in Anaheim.
All right. Well, we'll be listening. Orion, have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, Orion Samuelson, the morning show tomorrow morning at 5 to 6 with Orion and Max Armstrong right here on 720 WGN. And before we leave you this morning, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, March the 2nd. Not a lot of in the way of government and economic reports out today. We will see Michigan University of Michigan's final consumer sentiment index for February. And on the earnings calendar today, Foot Locker, JCPenney, and JD.com are out with market earnings for the fourth quarter of the year. So that'll be happening this morning. Could move the markets on this Friday, March the 2nd.